Hey yo, and here we go, another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear, and once again I am Mo, joined by best in the business, best co-host. I don't know if that's true or not, but I say it anyways to make him feel better. Mr. Brett Podcast, King of the Casters. How are you doing, Brett?
I'm doing good. Yeah, thanks for the nice, kind words. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm going to make it up later in the podcast at some point in time. I'm sure there'll be a point to insult you, and I will do that.
That's right. But, yeah. You know, we've said this many times before. This is not about us. This is about our wonderful guests. And today we do have another wonderful guest. She is the singer for Stitched Up Tart. We have Mixie. Mixie, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's awesome.
Great. I got to be honest, we've been walking around just basically saying Mixie now for about 48 hours just because we love saying the name.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that.
It's just, yeah. So, I mean, it's just so much fun. So where did it come from then?
Oh, man, it's a kind of a long story, but...
We have all the time in the world, Mixie.
Yeah, I have... It started as a band name that was because of a cat, which is another crazy story. And eventually the band name evolved into being my name. So it's just a weird evolution of how it all came together. So, yeah. That's everything summed up, kind of.
That's everything summed up. Brett said to me, Mixie, sounds like a Superman villain.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I figured you would be.
Yeah.
That's the problem with my name. There's no Superman villain coming out of my name. It's Brett. Oh, whoa. Yeah. Ooh, scary.
There has to be one. At least, like, that could be, like, Brett by day, and then, you know, something like Laser by night or something. I don't know. Is that an actual super villain?
Let's see. Laser. Oh, the living laser. That's there's something. But
there's something.
Yeah, there has to be something. So yeah. You can have like a day name. Like my first name is Alicia, so that's like my day name. And then stage, I go on and I'm Superhero Mixie. You know, kind of works out.
Awesome.
See. Tell me, is Mixie a completely, like, do you go on stage and do you think yourself, Mixie is a different person? Like, Mixie is, this is it, I'm now performing, and you transform that much?
Honestly, like, yeah, I'm kind of a totally different person on stage. I mean, I'm kind of an introvert, but I decided to choose the path of the extrovert for some reason. So when I go up there, I almost snap into a totally different persona. And then after I get off stage, I go run and hide from everyone again.
go back to your kittens.
Yeah, back to my kitten life.
Well, it's interesting though, because how performing then, based on that, did you ever get performance anxiety about getting on stage, and how do you deal with it, or did you deal with it, and kind of your evolution as a front person on a band, is it, I'm sure it was then a bit of a journey to do that as well.
Yeah. When I first started writing songs, I got my first guitar at 15 years old, took some lessons, and I would, you know, write songs on my acoustic, but I would never play them in front of people because I was really, really shy, and I was super nervous to do so. But I kept writing all these songs, and eventually it was like, okay, well, if I want to do music, I think I'm supposed to play this in front of people. so I should probably go out. So I actually used to force myself 3 nights a week and do open mic nights when I lived in Orlando. And I remember being so nervous that I was like shaking trying to play Nancy Sinatra Bang Bang at this little coffee house. The lights are all on me. There's like 50 people staring at me. And I just remember the uncontrollable shaking that I had back then, and how I knew that I needed to conquer that fear. So something about anything that really scares me, I always like go for it because I feel like I don't like being afraid of anything. So I forced myself to do it, and then I ended up hosting an open mic night every single week, Austin's Coffee and Film, in Orlando, every Thursday night. And luckily, they'd give me a free bottle of wine at this place. So at the time, that would get me through it. And I pretty much used that as a crutch for the longest time until about 5 years ago. And I realized, oh, I can perform without drinking. This is crazy. Nice. But yeah, it took a lot of time to get over that, I guess, nervousness. I still get those little butterflies in your stomach before you go on stage, or like before a tour, I get really anxious. Like I want to do my best, you know? But I feel like if you don't feel anything before you go up on stage, if you aren't excited and anxious about it, then you're probably not loving it as much as you used to. So, having those feelings means that it's something that you really care about.
Is there a pre-concert ritual, anything that you guys go through or individually you go through in order to get ready to get on stage?
Yeah, I've definitely developed more and more like rituals that I've had to do, because you start doing one and then you're like, I can't perform without this one thing, you know? I typically start off with a simple like 15-minute vocal warm-up while I'm curling my hair, because it takes a freaking hour. So I'm doing all my warm-ups and stuff during the hair curls. And then I'll go over the songs on the piano, like note for note, and just kind of hum with it so that I know mentally, listen, I've hit those notes just rehearsing it earlier, so I know I can do it later. And I think it's kind of a mental thing for me, just knowing like, all right, so that note is not that high because I did it earlier today, you know, and if I see it on the piano, I know it's there. And actually just added going through all the songs that we're performing lately and just belting it in the car so that I can get my belting voice up to standards, because I belt so much and I yell so much on stage. But usually when we practice, I'm singing, you know, quiet in my house because I don't want to upset the neighbors, you know? So yeah, there's all that stuff. And then I stretch, and sometimes we go to the gym beforehand and take a shower, and it's turned into an entire day full of ritual, basically.
That's funny. But you know, we've heard that so many, like some people have their rituals and then some people just, you know, walk right on stage. So, I mean, it's always very interesting to find out what most people do. I like the idea that you're doing it to kind of square it away in your mind even more so than anything else.
Oh, absolutely. Because I think especially as a vocalist, you can trick yourself into thinking that you're not going to hit the note. Like it's a very mental thing with vocal. Your brain is like connected to how your vocal cords are moving and where, what air is breathing and what parts. And if you know earlier on that you hit that and you didn't have any problems with it, then that's fine. And I think that I'm shocked if anybody doesn't do any sort of warm-ups or even warm like anything before they go on stage, because you, like if you go up on stage without doing any sort of exercise or stretching, you can hurt yourself, you know? Sully from Godsmack, for example, he got me into exercising and like getting some cardio and some blood flowing before you go up on stage, because those stages were so big. By the time we run from one side of the stage to the next, you're like winded by the first song, you know? So I now have to have some sort of exercise or like get the blood flowing before I go up there. When I used to just lay around and save the energy, I thought I was helping myself. But if you get your energy ready to go, you can give more on the stage.
I thought it was just fun. You make it sound like a job.
Yeah, right? I know. I when I first started this, I thought it was just for fun, too. There's so much work that goes into it, though.
It's interesting, though, because we have heard about those people, a lot of those people who don't do the warm-ups and don't do some sort of preparation. Later in their career, it costs them. They lose their voice. They lose the power of it. Or, you know, they have to do all sorts of things later in their career to recover their sound sometimes. So it's good that it's something you're doing now and you know, will continue to do.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've also learned from having vocal situations where I wasn't able to sing for a while, you know? So I used to be definitely quite the opposite. And once you realize, oh, this is my livelihood, I need this voice to work and I need to be able to perform the best I can, then it becomes something that's very important, because this is like my, you know, my vocal cords and my body are the only thing that's going to keep me going up on that stage, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the reasons that we're here, of course, is to talk about your new album, Darkness, which came out on March 13th. I love the album. I think it's fantastic. So, first off, let's just, and I mean, we've talked about Celierna, so let's start with Lost and how that came about.
Yeah, I'm super stoked we finally released this whole record, because we did it completely different. Lost was the very first track, after 2 years of not releasing new music. I've been friends with Soli for a few years, and over time we just grew closer, and he's kind of just one of those guys that, you know, when you meet someone and they just, you just are instantly best friends. Like, you just know each other, like you've known each other for years or something. And we kind of had that connection. So over time we kept in touch. And when it came time to record the record, my management actually asked me if I wanted to hit him up and see if he'd be down to sing on one of the songs. And I, of course, don't want to like ask anybody favors. I don't like, you know, doing that. But I mustered up the courage and I texted him. I'm like, hey, okay, so this is a weird question. Would you be interested in singing on this? And he's like, absolutely. And we just have to make sure that it's the right song. So we kind of went back and forth for a little while, trying to figure out what song. You know, some people wanted to do a cover and I wasn't really down for that. And then eventually, after the whole record was written, I was listening to Lost and I realized there was this heavy, like, instrumental part that could definitely use some vocal over it. And I was like, oh, well, this could work out pretty cool. So I went to management. They said it was a cool song and asked Soli, and Soli is super picky on music. So I was pretty nervous to send it to him and see what he thought. And he was just like, this is the best I've ever heard you sound. And I really like the song, and let's do it. So he didn't want to just send his vocals through email because it's not as sentimental. So I ended up flying out to Nashville, where Godsmack is, they moved their entire studio to Nashville so bands can go and record over there. And we ended up tracking the vocals somehow. And then on the way, after the vocals were done, I was like, he's like, so who's going to sing my part? And I'm like, well, you know, some of the guys in the band can sing it, or if we're on tour with someone, maybe they can come up on stage and do it, and, you know, preferably you. So that kind of happened, you know, it worked out, and a couple months later we were on the road with them. So, and that tour, by the way, was all Soli. We didn't even have a booking agent at the time. He went behind the whole industry, and somehow, you know, I mean, it's a tour with Godsmack and Volbeat, so there's going to be like 10,000, 12,000 people a show. Everybody wants on that bill. He went above and beyond to make sure that we were on it, and it was just really awesome. Like, he really went to bat for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. And one thing I'll say about Celly is he's incredible live. Like, he's really amazing. Well, I mean, you talked about just him working out and getting that blood flowing. So besides that, is there anything else that you learned from him performing?
We learned so much. I watched Godsmack side stage every single night except one night. And that was because the side stage was too squishy to watch. But, I mean, that tour was such an experience. We took in every single thing we possibly could. You know, not too many times you get an opportunity like that, and you want to try to learn as much as you can. We learned that we need our own sound guy. That was the biggest thing, because on a stage like that, you have no idea what the sound is like out there. You can do whatever you can on your end on the stage, but what everybody's hearing out there, it is absolutely so important to have somebody that knows your music and that knows how you want people to hear it out there. And we finally learned that was very, very necessary. So we actually decided, instead of doing, hiring a second guitar player, we decided to hire a sound guy for the Steel Panther run we did. And we literally have never sounded as good as we ever had, because we hired someone that knows our songs, that styled it in. That was the biggest thing that we took away from that tour, as well as like how good he is with the crowd and how you can have fun up there. It doesn't have to be so serious. You know, sometimes he just starts, you know, haggling the audience. And it's just really funny. He'll just take a second and be like, hey, you know what? We're right here right now. Let's stop the show and actually have a conversation and connect a little more with everyone. And so I think that to know, because I used to do that a lot more, but I started kind of being a little more professional because I thought that you're supposed to. So we started turning into almost like a robot on stage, where it was like, for a little bit, we just became autopilot and everything was just so like almost scripted to a point that we lost the fun part of doing it, you know, like the having fun and really like, you know, picking someone out of the entire 10,000 people and like talking to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of like opened us up to bringing it back to the fun stuff and being humble, even at that level, a band like that, like every day the crew, the band was making sure we were all happy, we were all okay, and very welcoming. And I love artists and bands that, you know, welcome people with open arms, little tiny bands like us. And it's just humbling, and it makes me always want to make sure I'm that way, the bigger the band gets.
Now, Sebastian Bach, of course, chose you for his tour, doing the 30th anniversary of the first Skid Row album. So what did that mean to you? And of course, unfortunately, so many dates are going to be postponed because we were supposed to see you on April 3rd. But you know, tell us about that.
Yeah, obviously, Sebastian Bach is a legend. Like, it was when we got the email, and you know, I check my email every day. It's not very often you see Sebastian Bach tour. You're like, wow, how did this even come about?
We haven't had one of those yet.
Still waiting.
Yeah. I just got the new dates in the mail. So we are going to announce the new dates, probably Monday, which is really exciting. So, Sebastian, literally, you know, when we found out about the tour, we were actually waiting on another tour, and that one just came out of the blue. And we were like, well, I guess we're not going to wait any longer for the other one. And I absolutely love that first Skid Row album. There are so many hit songs, like just classic songs that will like go forever, you know? And to be able to see that perform live is really cool. And yeah, as soon as he posted and announced that we were opening up for him on these dates, he announced like how he had handpicked us and how he like prides himself in the bands that he takes out. So having him say something like that is seriously like the biggest compliment ever. And I just want to do my best and don't want to disappoint Sebastian Bach. I want to just like at least do good for him so he likes it.
I think, yeah, you're going to nail it. I feel very confident. You're absolutely going to nail it.
I'm going to do my best.
Now, how many shows did you wind up doing with him? Any?
with Sebastian, no. The tour was supposed to start on the 24th of March.
Okay.
So literally the day that our album comes out on the 13th of March, on Friday the 13th, the tour got postponed. It felt like the apocalypse for like at least a week. It was raining in Los Angeles, which is weird. You know, I'm naturally a hermit at home anyway, so I don't really leave as it is. So I haven't really been outside to see how the world is, except for band practice. There's way less traffic, which is nice. But we were supposed to leave on the 24th of March and pretty much not be back until the end of May. We've been, you know, practicing and everything for it. So It was a little shocking, but we got new dates and we're ready to announce when those are. And I know it's going to happen. Everything happens for a reason. I'm trying to look for the best, you know, the positive in all of this. You know, what is the good that will come out of it? So I know it will happen, and maybe there is a bigger purpose for it all.
Well, we can always hope. I mean, one of the things that's impressed me about you guys is that you did the online show. You've got the movie night coming up. You're actually, you know, doing your best. Plus, you have the email for people to reach you and be able to talk. And I think that's fantastic. I mean, in this kind of environment, we all need to kind of stick together as much as possible. And I think you're doing a really good job attempting that.
Thank you. Yeah, I was like, well, honestly, yesterday I did about 12 hours straight of Skype hangouts. So one-on-one, like 30-minute Skypes with like individuals. And you can hear it in my voice. I was talking for 12 hours yesterday. I realized, okay, well, how can we still connect with people even though we can't be at a show? So we did a little acoustic performance, the Netflix party thing on Monday. We're going to try that out and see how that goes. And if it goes well, then we'll have movie night every Monday night, you know, until everybody's able to leave their places. But yeah, I think we're trying to organize a full show for people. But it really just depends. We want to make sure that the footage is, you know, that the quality is going to be good enough, because we don't want to put everything online if it's really hard to get good quality streaming for a live show. So even our acoustic performance, I think I was blowing out with like like belting vocals. You can't even hear anything, you know. Yeah, we're trying to keep the music alive. And I know there's a lot of people out there right now that are missing all the live shows that they had planned. And a lot of people look forward to those shows, and, you know, they don't really have much else going on. They go to work, they rinse and repeat. And all they look forward to is that In This Moment show that they want to go see. Or, you know, and my dad was actually going to go see In This Moment in Orlando. And unfortunately, everything, the whole world shut down. So the festivals, everything is kind of moved. So trying to bring some sort of light on to social media with the kittens I'm fostering right now, and change the subject up a little bit, you know?
I think, you know, I mean, obviously you have that Big Heart Ranch, Kitten Rescue LA, and Guitars for Vets. I think Guitars for Vets, I think that's like the coolest idea ever. Mm-hmm. Honestly, the fact that the proceeds from the Warriors shirt are going to that, I think that's just really cool.
Yeah, we wanted to do something to, like, do some sort of positive thing for veterans for the song Warrior, and somehow coincide it. And Guitars for Vets makes so much sense because it's a rock band, and they've been doing some great things. We're trying to team up with some people that I can't really discuss here to do more stuff for the veterans and for our warriors and military and stuff. So I'm doing as much as we can. I think that, you know, we could be your average band and just play music and, you know, try to help people in that way. But I want to do more. If we have a platform to be able to, then why don't we try to use music in ways to play for the military who doesn't get it that much, you know, and to, I don't know, somehow give back to the world. So yeah.
You know, and you're doing that with your actions, and I think you're doing that with the lyrics in your songs and what you're trying to reach there, too. I mean, if you could tell, my favorite track on the new album is the title track, Darkness, and I know there's a story behind that one. If you kind of share that, please, with the listeners.
Yeah, so obviously the whole album is called Darkness because the title track, Darkness, kind of defines lyrically the underlying of what I was trying to say throughout the whole thing, where I wanted people to realize that they'd been through those dark times before and they'd made it out alive. And that song in particular was written for a couple really close followers of our band that I consider family, and they were, you know, having a really hard time where they didn't think that it was even worth it to be alive. And they almost thought that it would be better off without them around, for all the people around them. And I had to literally pull them out, I don't know how many times, time and time again, and bring them back to life in a way. And there was a lot of really scary moments where there was, you know, wellness checks and things like that, and suicide hotlines involved, a lot of really, really scary times. And luckily, I wrote a song for them because I wanted them to know that they don't have to be afraid of dark, and they made it through it. They've done this before. They can do it again. And, you know, I want to say that those people that I wrote it about now are very, doing very well. They're, one of them's married and has a mortgage. She's doing great. She just graduated college. The other one is self-harm free for, I think, a year now. So that there is hope. There is, you know, after those hard times, you can make it through it. And there is good things that comes out of it. And I just want people to know that.
Yeah, that's really cool. I think that's super cool. I also like that there's a common thread between the cover to darkness and to the previous Never Alone. I like the cover to that as well. And I think, yeah, I love the common thread, just kind of the birds and the things that you've done there.
Yeah, you know, I don't mean to write about mental health and introspective kind of stuff, but and I didn't mean for it all to tie in together. Like originally when we did Never Alone, I wasn't thinking there's going to be this freeing bird. I feel like birds are like freeing, and music frees you from, you know, takes you away from whatever your everyday life is. And it releases you from whatever it is that you're dealing with. And it just kind of made sense how they coincided. And with lyrics, the most authentic stuff I write ends up being the stuff that I talk about that, you know, is those dark things that you pull from that give you strength. And originally, when I was trying to write for darkness, I wanted to write just about strength and just about how you can, you know, like how you can do anything. You know, I want people to know that they can, and I want that hope. But when I was writing about these strong things, I was realizing that it wasn't coming out completely authentic, because the only way I know to be strong is because of all of the challenges I had to go through in order to gain that strength. And that strength takes those dark things, and strength takes having to go through a lot of challenges to build that strength. And so I realized that's just kind of what lyrical content comes out of me, and what I feel like comes out the most authentic and can hopefully reach people as deep as I possibly can.
How much? Oh, please go ahead, Brett. I see you're about to ask a question.
Okay. Well, I was actually just gonna ask about the evolution of the albums, because I mean, you had spoken earlier about how your recording process changed, but also just I think that between Never Alone and Darkness, there's a sound evolution. So maybe speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, we could have done like an extension of Never Alone and wrote that same album again. But the one thing that I was mostly focused on is not being stuck to the same thing every single record. I want to be able to explore different genres and implement them into rock, and not be pigeonholed into doing the same thing over and over again. I like to mix it up, as you would say. but I'd get bored if I wrote the same record all the time. Like, it would be boring. So the reason the second record took so long, and we wrote 70 songs versus the 30 we wrote for Never Alone. Yeah.
Wow. You have 100 songs already?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't even know what we'll do with any of those, because I like to write fresh. But we really threw paint and experimented on this record so much, to a point where we didn't want to sound like everything else. We wanted to have a unique sound about it. We didn't, you know, we're going to get compared to stuff no matter what, but we didn't want to be compared to anything but what we were creating. And it's hard to be completely original, but the main thing that we found in Darkness was the one thing that makes us different than other bands. Like, you can make a guitar sound a million ways, but the vocals are something that you can't, like, you know, unless you take my vocal cords and like cut them out and put them on a different record, or take the stems from the actual recording and use those. But so what the producer was able to do was take my voice and use that and make it an instrument throughout majority of the album, in and out, and it gave it its own kind of sound. And I don't know, we really tried to find our own voice, as you would say, and it was very much lyrically and melody driven on this album, as opposed to Never Alone, which was very much heavy, more guitar heavy and more screaming. We don't necessarily think that this is the way we're going to sound forever. I don't want any album to sound like the last. So the next album is going to be a blend between the two. As of now, it might change, who knows, in the writing process, because everything always changes as we go, what feels right. So, yeah, we just want to always keep people on their toes.
It was 4 years in between your two albums. It sounds like the intention is to have the next one come out much, much sooner.
Oh, absolutely. We're already writing. I mean, luckily with this downtime, there's a lot of producers available to get in the studio to start writing some songs. I think we got like three so far that are pretty much written, and just continue to write and try to keep things going, keep the momentum going. Cause I feel like the way that we released this record, where we released it with the waterfall effect, you know, one song a month, or we'd skip a month here and there, but it kept people, gave people something to look forward to every month. And it made things fresh and new. And I really like the way that it was released. And I'm hoping that we can continue to do that and give people music a lot sooner than waiting a whole nother couple years for it.
I think you're going to see that actually becomes kind of the norm. Like, I think you're on the cusp of something there. I think it's going to become very much how people do it, you know, a song a month or whatever it is for a while until they have a full album, because there's no reason to do it the way people still were doing it in the 70s.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why we wanted to experiment this way. There's a lot of pop artists and rap artists and stuff that had been releasing singles, and it was working well for them. So the rock generation, or the rock genre, for some reason, well, A, you know, rock fans are very loyal and they do buy records still. But you know, it's still changed as well with the streaming services. So yeah, I definitely believe that even record deals are going to change. I don't believe that there's going to be people, you know, signing actual album deals, but I think it'll be more single based. I think that's going to change. I think it's definitely going to be the future to release it, you know, song by song or EP by EP. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Your songwriting, how do you do it? Do you have the song idea? Is it usually like a concept, or do you get a title or a lyric, or how do you kind of go about crafting the song? And at what point does the rest of the band come in?
So I usually do a little homework before I go into the studio. And typically it's like, you know, a couple of us in the studio with the producer, and we write from the studio because it's the best way to get the ideas on a quality recording. And I feel like you get the most authentic stuff as you're going, instead of just jamming something, looping it over and over. I feel like you come up with the best stuff. You can hear it back, how it's going to sound through that computer. And I usually go on with an idea, concepts, where I want to start, a subject matter, like Warrior, I wanted to write a song for our vets. Like Darkness, I went in, like, I just wanted to write a song that made you think of the color black, or like a dark color, and just like shade. And I just went in with that idea. Like, so things start with the initial idea, and then as the song's being written, and let's say they're looping a verse, trying to get a good riff, and it starts to build, then I sit back there like a fly on the wall and kind of come up with a melody over it while they're working on the music and and lyrics. And then I'll come up, you know, tell them what I came up with over it, and they'll give me their advice of maybe we can add another note here and make it even better, or lift here, or use this word instead of that word. And so it's a collaborative effort between us and the producer to ultimately make whatever that song is that day. And I usually start with a meditation as well on what I want it to be and how to kind of think outside of my normal words and normal thinking.
You obviously, I think it took a little while for the band to kind of, I think, find its membership, you know. I mean, but you guys have been pretty steady now as like a four piece with the same members now for the last several years. I imagine that going forward, both on stage and in the studio, is really helpful now that you guys are you know, a tight group, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, when you first start a band, you don't really know how to manage it. Like, I didn't know what I was doing, and that you learn as you go. And, you know, I might not have been very good at trying to make sure everybody's happy all the time. At the beginning, you know, and then of course some people don't, you know, they think that something's right for them, and if, you know, you don't get a record deal within 2 months of being a band, then it might not be like, you know, right for you. So I'll take definitely some of the blame on not being very good at managing everybody's happiness and everything. So, but I've gotten better, and I've found people that really believe, I think that is one huge thing, that really believe in the band and want to be as dedicated and will do anything for the band. And it comes first over any job and money and girls and all that stuff, you know, and other bands. So it's the loyalty that takes a little while to find, just like any relationship. It's hard to find the people that are going to be loyal as you are. And it took a while, but yeah, this is the four. We all have been through so much together. I don't think that in the next 20, 30 years, anybody's going anywhere unless they drink themselves there. But yeah, we're all in it together. And, I realized actually as a four piece, without recycling a fifth member, that we're the core, we're the nucleus, and, we all are ready to do whatever it takes to keep going.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, we think of bands as being families, but like you had mentioned earlier about your dad wanting to go to the Florida show. Now, how important is it for you in your journey with your family, like to have your family in the backing of them?
Oh, they're like, I said to my dad recently, I was like, hey, Dad, you remember it was right before that Godsmack tour. I was about to do the biggest tour of our lives. And I was like, remember when you told me that I could do anything I put my mind to? And he's like, you believed that crap? I'm like, yeah, Dad, I did. and, you know, there was a time, like, before this band, before I started this band in 2010, I'd been on a major label for a minute, and I'd moved out to LA to pursue this whole thing. And it just been like heartbreak after heartbreak after, I don't know, I was homeless for a year at a certain point. It was rough. And I came home for Christmas right before I started this band. And I told my parents, I don't think I can do this. Like, it's rough. It's hard. I just don't know if I'm cut out for it, not if I'm talented enough for it. And they both, no matter how bad they wanted me to come back home to Florida, were like, no, you have to go back out to LA, finish what you started. You started something. And until you've finished it, then you can't come back. You have to finish it. And so I was like, great. I don't have a choice now. So went out back to LA, I picked up my heart, stitched it back together, put the band together. Within 2 months, it crashed again. And the drummer Decker, he was like, nope, we got to finish it. We got it. This is it. He's like, he wanted to be the drummer in the original lineup, but the other guitar player had a different guy in mind. So he was like, no, I really think that you have something here. Let's put this together, and picked me back up and kept going, and still 10 years later, going as strong as we can.
I guess that's where the band name Stitched Up Heart came from, because I think that's one of the best band names I've heard in several years.
Thank you. It took about 100 band names before we came up with that.
So,
including Mixie,
that,
of course.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Talking about that kind of, your parents pushing you back into it, in your early days. Can we talk a little bit about Redemption Song?
Oh, good Lord.
Because I am fascinated, especially when you talk about your early career when you were, getting on stage and having to the nervousness about performing and that type of thing. I mean, here you go on to a reality TV series, contests of all female singers, and it's, the whole purpose is to make you nervous in order to create tension and in order to create good TV. It seems like the whole purpose is to get you out of your shell that you're, but also, I mean, how it seems like it'd be difficult for anybody, but especially considering what you kind of described, how you started performing, it seems like it must have been, you won. So there's that.
Yeah. But I don't know how that happened.
But it just seems like that would be an incredible journey that doing that show.
Yeah, it was a very interesting experience. And I had just, I'd just gotten off tour. I was filling in rhythm guitar, backing vocals, and keyboards for a band called Antiproduct. And I came home and I was like bored looking on Craigslist for stuff to do. And I found this ad for reality show. And I was like, you know what? Why not? And so I talked to them on the phone, and I actually had found like a small job bartending a little bit at the time when I used to drink a little too much, but they were like, we love alcoholics. And I was like, okay, cool. What do I wear? And they were like, you don't need to wear much. And I'm like, okay, great. Sounds good. So I went to audition.
Wow.
With a bottle of Smirnoff Ice. And I was like, hey, is it cool if I drink? As you do at 3 p.m. in the day. They were like, you're hired. So for reality television, obviously they want, the most extreme cases. This particular casting was, we had strippers and pimps, like women pimps. And I was the token drunk girl, the little rocker. There was only two rocker girls. And then there was like the Jersey fighting girl, a lot of attitude in that house. And I just kind of went in for the experience. Chris Jericho was actually the host of that show. So
yeah,
that
I was
back
ask about
in
him.
2000. Yeah. And it's funny. He's actually on the label that I'm signed to as well right now. And
awesome.
I'm sure that you'll probably see some stuff happen and kind of come full circle in the future. But yeah, so I didn't realize what I was doing. Like, I didn't realize what I was getting myself into. I remember the first day, all the girls were just like at the pool and they were like, who do you think is going to win? And I was like, I don't really care. I'm just here for the beer. I'm just chilling. Like, I just want to experience something different, and then a month later, I don't know how that happened, but I did end up getting a record deal. It was only one song, and it was a crazy time when streaming just started getting really popular and album sales were starting to drop and the label was, firing a bunch of people. And so, of course, the little reality star isn't going to make it very far in that industry. And that was where I went home after that, after we got dropped, and
oh, okay.
was ready to give up. But that's when my parents told me no, and that's when I came back out and started the band. So I didn't really plan to do the solo thing anyway. It was just kind of got pushed into that world, the solo thing, and I never really liked being by myself. I always liked having a band. So it just didn't feel right anyway, and there's a reason for everything.
Chris Jericho is one of those people who I think he carries himself all the time like I'm a star. You know, I'm larger than life. You know, that's kind of his, that's been a big key to his success, and he's had success in so many different fields. So was there much interaction with him? Like,
he was supposed to be the tough guy that would break the girls' record if they got dropped, if their performance wasn't up to par. And he had the persona that he was mean, but I saw right through it. Like, I could tell that this guy is cool. Like, you know, so he would do this, you've been dropped from the label, and I'd look over him and, like, with this smile on my face, like, come on, you know that you're just the nicest guy ever.
Yeah.
And we've obviously we're all in this active rock community together, so we've come across each other here and there, and you know, there's some cool stuff happening in the future, so stay tuned.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, Brett knew him before he was very famous. They used to talk albums. He used
yeah,
to work,
that's right.
I worked in a place where Chris Jericho used to come in all the time and buy albums, and they would talk. And Brett would be like, you're buying it? I thought I was the only one who had that album. And
yeah, we bonded over the band Pretty Maids. It's hilarious, right?
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Now, you talked earlier about the Skid Row and loving that. So what are some of those other albums then that you absolutely love and you know, just really would listen to on the tour bus kind of thing?
Me, I personally end up like, if I do get to choose the music, usually the person that drives gets to choose, but we hired a driver, so we listen to whatever he listens to now. But before, I actually am very inspired by, like, motivational speakers. So I listen to the words that they have to say and the messages that they have. So, like, I usually choose to listen to a lot of Tony Robbins and stuff because I want to be able to give positive messages in my words. So I'm very, very much inspired by that. And I don't want to accidentally steal someone else's words in a song, you know? So I try to get my inspiration whenever I'm listening to anything from something motivational or something that is empowering or maybe gives me a different perspective on stuff that I can, you know, give other people a different perspective that hasn't been used in lyrics and through some other artists. You know, so I really try to stay away from listening to other artists as much as possible for that reason, to stay as authentic as possible. But as far as the band goes, our bass player is jamming Red Hot Chili Peppers every day, as you do if you're a bass player. And our drummer pretty much ends up listening to whatever bands we've ever toured with or are on tour with currently. So we get very familiar with their music. And then our guitar player really enjoys movie film scoring kind of music, like Hans Zimmer and stuff. So it's probably the most peaceful music to listen to when you're trying to sleep on the RV. So we all have totally different tastes in what we listen to.
That's fantastic. Love it.
I can say I really think that you are one of the most authentic people we've ever had the chance to talk to, and we have talked to hundreds doing this. So,
oh, wow. That's cool.
You know, this has been just an absolute blast for us, and, you know, we've taken up a lot of your time. Looking how long we've been talking now, I'm surprised. But
those kittens are going to be missing you, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's been really,
well,
you should get
I think
back
I
to
have
the kittens.
Another, yeah, I actually think I have another interview, but I'm having so much fun. I'm like, oh, we'll just, you know, ignore the call if it comes through.
Well, you know, I mean, that's it. We try and do it a little different in that, yes, we have questions, but it's not so much questions. We just try and have a conversation and you know, and talk and keep it pretty chill. So, but it
yeah,
we should
it.
Let you go, Mixie. Unfortunately, I'm hoping we still get a chance to see you live, like with whatever the show is be, or you know your schedule is. But this is your chance. So let's give you a chance to promote yourself, because people should definitely be checking out Stitch Up Heart.
I really appreciate that, and there will be new dates up, so hopefully we'll be able to hang out again in person.
That's right. Get back to Calgary and actually be able to see Sebastian and you rocking out the house. Yeah. That would be great.
Yeah, last time we were in Calgary, it was with Godsmack, and it was awesome. So, I really like the people out there.
Very good. Well, so far, we really like you.
So I'm glad the feeling is mutual.
You're very active on social media. Where can people check you out?
You can go to our Instagram, Stitched Apart, Facebook, Stitched Apart Rock, Twitter, Stitched Apart, YouTube, Stitched Apart Rock, our website, stitchedapart.org. But the main website, if you are feeling like you want to help the world, the kitten rescue who I've been fostering these bottle babies with since the tour got postponed, if you want to help them, they need all the help they can get at kittenrescue.org.
I imagine that with what's going on in the world, actually the need for that is even greater than ever.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of fosters available now because everybody's working from home, which is really good. So there's definitely plenty of places for the cats to go, but the resources are being it's not as much money coming in to give them shots. The vets are all closed and things like that. So the resource is the thing that they need to help with the most.
Well, I think it's fantastic that that you are putting yourself out there, and certainly that you're helping out with all these charities. I think it's got to be the wave of the future as far as, people in a position to, have a soapbox and be able to say these kind of things, because I think it's what we need as a society now.
I absolutely agree. I feel like, and to be fair, when you do stuff for other people, and for a very long time, I think I was living the normal human way and kind of being selfish. I think naturally our human instinct is to make sure you're fed and make sure that you're surviving. And I was very, very much in survival mode for a very long time, especially after I moved out to LA and didn't have a place to live. I made sure that I was okay. And once I was okay and I knew that I can survive this, I realized I can reach out to help other things and people in need. And honestly, it feeds my soul more than anything that I've ever done as far as like trying to get something for myself. Giving back, it is the best feeling that you could possibly have. And it makes me happy.
Yeah, I agree. That's awesome. Thank you so much, Mixie. This has been, I've had a blast too. Like, I've really had so much fun.
Aww.
So thank you so much. You're so great.
Well, we look forward to having you on again. Absolutely. With the tour, seeing you live, new album, anytime, just like you say to your fans, you're open for them. Well, we're open for business anytime you want to talk. So thank you, Mixie. Stitched Up Heart, the album is Darkness. And it's awesome, and everybody should listen to it.
Thank you.
And I apologize to those other people, though I know the interview won't be as good.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It was like probably 26 minutes ago.
Oops.
They might not have called, because I would have gotten a missed call, but I don't know what happened.
Okay. Well, hey, at least the time was spent well spent then. So.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mixie. All right.
Yeah, have yourself a great day.
Thank you.
All the best.
You too. Bye.
Bye now.
losing my balance again. Can't get a grip, can't get a hold of the state that I'm in. I'm feeling the weight, I'm feeling the weight, I'm feeling the weight on my shoulders. Keep slipping away, keep slipping away. Please show me. Can't keep running away, running away.